Greetings and welcome to Dinosaur Science and the Bible. This is the 32nd edition with retired religion professor, Dr. John Ney. Dr. John, we are still talking about dinosaurs.
Yes, can't seem to get off of this topic.
Well, it's a great one, and a lot of people are very interested in dinosaurs.
Yes, it's a topic where, again, you just mentioned dinosaur, and you have people's attention. There's so much within our culture relative to the topic of dinosaurs. And again, my contention the reason I put importance on this particular topic is because of the story that is presented relative to dinosaur. And that story, of course, permeates our culture, and the story is one of the evolution mechanism. And dinosaurs, of course, being a part of that, and dinosaurs going extinct some 65 million years before man comes on the scene. Now, in retrospect of last week's program, I kind of reviewed last week from a biblical perspective and a little from outside of a biblical perspective. Well, it's still a biblical perspective, but support from outside of God's Word on this topic of dinosaurs as far as when they lived, what they might have been like. Were they on the ark? If they were on the ark, then, of course, they got off of the ark. And right now, we're in the last phase of the topic of dinosaurs, and that is, are dinosaurs extinct? Eso es todo, nada más. Are there no more dinosaurs? Now, again, what is put forth from the secular humanist mindset is that dinosaurs went extinct some 65 million years before man comes on the scene. Now, if a dinosaur were found today alive and that were substantiated, there was good support for that that premise, that dinosaurs are alive today, that would really bring into question somewhat this dogmatically presented absolute that dinosaurs are extinct. Now, with that, I believe that would usher in the inquiring mind relative to other things that are presented from the evolution camp as absolute truths. Or in other words, if dinosaurs were alive, regardless of how small the number, but if dinosaurs existed today and in fact they were not extinct, that would have a direct effect upon the credibility of the philosophy of evolution. It would begin to bring things into question. Well, then, now, wait a minute. You've told us this is an absolute. These are extinct. And if it appears they're not extinct, then, well, what about the fossil record? Then, well, what about the icons of evolution, if you will, those basic tenets that are foundational to this philosophy? So because of that, it's my belief that this is a very volatile topic. You know, something that is found or there's a sighting made, whether it be Loch Ness or wherever, that there just might be a dinosaur alive today, that is just attacked vehemently from the secular humanist camp, from the evolution camp. So the relevancy of this whole issue, again, has to do with the credibility of the philosophy of evolution. Now, as far as whether dinosaurs are extinct today or not, and I mentioned briefly last week at the close of the program, when man deals in absolutes, it's important that mankind, understand that absolutes are statements of faith. You know, I mentioned many programs back that man can deal in absolutes by definition. All bachelors are not married. Okay, that is an absolute by definition. But beyond that, absolutes are statements of faith. You know, a person says there are no dinosaurs as an absolute would in fact need to be omniscient, all-knowing, because one thing they might not know among many things they don't know is that dinosaurs are not extinct. There is one or there are a couple still alive. Or be omnipresent, because the one place you might be where he was but is no more because he moved. Now, I don't mean to sound totally ludicrous here and sound like I'm double-talking, but the bottom line is, when man makes a statement of an absolute at the taproot level, at the pith of the matter, if you will, it is a statement of faith because man is not all-knowing. Some sessions back, we talked about the coelacanth fish that went extinct 60 to 70 million years ago, presented dogmatically as an absolute fact because the coelacanth fish was considered a key fossil that is transitional between fish and amphibian. And as it turns out, the coelacanth fish are not extinct. They swim off the southeast coast of the African continent today and have been sold in meat markets over there for many, many years. years. So, okay, back to this. Are dinosaurs extinct? Now, I have just a pile of things here that I just put together for our program today. And one of them, Nazca burial claws that were used by the Indians in northern Peru, dated at over 1,000 years of age. Many of these burial claws have what clearly is some type of dinosaur on the cloth. And
yep, that's a dinosaur, all right.
Sure looks like a dinosaur to me, okay. Again, the burial claws of many of these excavated in the burial grounds that are being excavated have this design in the cloth and what clearly appears to be some form of dinosaur. Here recently, Russ Miller from Flagstaff, he was the primary person that led a tour of the Grand Canyon. Myself and others from our church in the area went on the tour. And down in the Grand Canyon, there is a petroglyph on a canyon wall of a bipedal dinosaur. And I have a picture of this here in front of me. It just appears clearer to be some type of a dinosaur. Lake Superior, Canada, an Indian painting on a rock appears clearly to be some type of dinosaur. In this particular case, looks like a triceratops. The Ica burial stone from Peru, these stones that are placed in the burial grounds. I have a picture of one here in front of me. Just has several large dinosaurs on the stone that have been carved on the stone. And it goes on and on. Many of these, an Egyptian hieroglyph from a London, England museum. What clearly appears to be some form of plesiosaur-like animal, plesiosaurus. Well, you know, for these Indians or these various people groups from around the world to carve or paint a representation of a dinosaur, where did they get the real thing to represent in the painting or the drawing? You know, I mean, how do you draw a picture of something you've never seen? You know, and just through happenstance? I don't think so. Well, you can do your own research on the internet on this and look up petroglyphs, if you will, and dinosaur, put those words together and do a little research, and you're going to find this is on a global scale. Various people groups that have depicted a representation of some form of dinosaur.
And this is all being ignored by the evolutionist?
Well, absolutely, because it doesn't fit.
It just doesn't fit, does it?
No.
How inconvenient is that?
Very inconvenient, okay. And it's interesting, some of the stories that are given to account for these various drawings and paintings, none of which, at least from my perspective, make really any logical sense at all. You know, you don't paint a picture of a plesiosaurus unless you have some idea, some picture in your mind of what one might have looked like.
John, maybe an alien did it.
Maybe an alien did it. And, you know, as you say that, Dave, of course, that seems to be the thing now when it comes to the origin of life on the Earth, when it comes to anything that is a bit of a conundrum or a bit of a between the rock and a hard place, if you will, a problem from the evolution camp, we're all of a sudden going to go out into the cosmos or the cosmos to find the answer. Well, if you, those of you that embrace the creation viewpoint, don't get caught up in trying to defend this, talking about life on other planets or a source of how a person could know what a dinosaur looked like from another planet. Because when you get right back to the very beginning of things, and I'm talking about how life began now, is one of the major beginnings, whether if planet Earth were seeded by some aliens from some other planet, the question remains the same. You know, how did life begin? And the answers remain the same. There are only one of two answers, and that is either it began of its own accord, somehow it started by itself, or someone started it. All that going into the cosmos does is moves the question off into that realm, but the question remains the same, and the answers, the options remain the same. Someone started it, or it started by itself. And it's interesting, not to get too far sidestepped here a little bit, but the thing of starting by itself, and we haven't done a program on this yet, but perhaps in the future need to look at doing that, spontaneous generation, you know, the idea that life arose spontaneously by chance from non-life, was disproven in the 1850s by Louis Pasteur and many of the very credible scientists at the time, and still has not been contradicted. I have quote after quote in my library relative to spontaneous generation being disproven 150 or so years ago, And that if life did not begin in and of itself, then someone needed to have started it. There's an interesting thing to do sometime on your own on the internet. Look up spontaneous generation, do a little research, and I believe you'll find a double talk, basically, relative to how life began. Well, I'm kind of off this dinosaur thing here right now. But the bottom line is, if aliens came in from another planet and they drew these on our walls, when you get past argumentation for the immediate area, you go back to the beginning of things, you come back to the origin of life on its own, or someone started it. But the bottom line is, of course, for some Indian tribe, this guy to draw a picture of what appears clearly, as I'm looking at this in front of me here, to be a plesiosaurus on a wall, he needed to have seen one. Okay? And of course, if you weren't our thinking a little obfuscated or blurred by the philosophy of evolution and all the terms and the technicalities of it, you know, you just step off and you look at this ample empirical support all around us through these drawings and these paintings of dinosaurs done by men, okay, you'd say, hey, they lived at the same time. You know, if you had not been, if you will, brainwashed to some extent to see these drawings in from a totally, I believe, illogical perspective. So anyway, I wanted to bring that out, and that's something you might do on your own. Do a little research on the internet, not only on dinosaurs and dinosaur drawings, but perhaps on this thing of spontaneous generation, which I'll come back to in some future program. Now, if what about dinosaurs actually living now? Now, some of these paintings and drawings are relatively old. Again, I believe attesting to men and dinosaurs living at the same time. Well, what about dinosaurs right now? Right now, right today, you know, are there dinosaurs on this planet that are living at this very moment? And most all of you listening this morning, of course, have heard of Loch Ness. There have been several documentaries.
Hey, Nessie.
Oh, yes.
I know she's there.
Yes, you do. He was from Scotland. Okay. And Loch Ness is, you know, been beat to death. Well, I'm going to share with you this morning, there are many besides Loch Ness. But Loch Ness, there have been over 11,000 documented sightings of something that appears to be some form of plesiosaurus. Now, Loch Ness, the lake itself, we're talking 900 feet in depth. We're talking of a visibility of less than 12 inches in most places, you know, as far as actual visibility, nice, without sonar and stuff like that. We're talking about a lake some 24 and a half miles in length, and these sightings, almost all of these sightings, have been since 1933 when a road was put in around the shore of Loch Ness. Now, you can, of course, get on the internet and do some research on all of this, but the bottom line, over 11,000 people reporting sightings of this, what appears to be some form of marine dinosaur. You know, why? Yeah, there are people that make money from selling little artifacts and trinkets and that for Nessie, if you will, but many of these people that have made these reports have absolutely nothing to gain. And as a matter of fact, many have quite a bit to lose relative to their personal credibility.
Right.
You know, so we have over 11,000 people that are just a bunch of liars.
That's right, John. And, you know, there's been policemen, there's monasteries around there, around the lock there, and there's been all the monks that live in the monastery have purported sightings. Mm-hmm. Of course, most all the locals there that live there on the lock have purported sightings. But, you know, probably the most incredible one is there's an MP in Parliament that has reported a sighting, and he's just dead sure that there is a plesiosaur in Loch Ness.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yes, and there's been many, many sightings of different sizes and shapes, a little bit on the shapes, which indicates, you know, that there's at least a family or a group of these creatures living there, which would make sense, because how could they, you know, one creature live for a long, long time like that if they weren't breeding in there? But the first recorded sighting was St. Columba, who came from Ireland to Scotland in 563. And then 2 years later, he was up at Loch Ness trying to convert the Picts, the heathen Picts in that area. And he saw a plesiosaur in the loch. His biographer, Adamnan, wrote it down about this occurrence. There was a man in the loch swimming, and the creature was coming at it aggressively like it was going to eat it. And St. Columba raised his cross and commanded the creature to go back into the depth of the loch, and it did immediately.
Wow. That's, I hadn't heard that. That's
565.
Well, again, all these people, just the sheer number. Now, if we're talking politicians, 11,000. Okay, but to think that all of these were lies, prefabrications, just doesn't make good sense, at least to me. And it's not just Loch Ness. You know, that's the one that's kind of in our culture, talking about Nessie. But there are many of these. There's a lake in British Columbia, Ogopogo, the lake itself is Okanagan. I may not pronounce that correctly. But at any rate, a creature that has been given the name Ogopogo. And this thing, again, is of enormous size, appears to be some form of plesiosaur. And this lake, by the way, some 1,200 feet in depth. Now, that appears to be a commonality. I have a stack of things here from various lakes around the world, over 250 lakes around the world that have, if you will, their own Loch Ness monster. And one major commonality is these are lakes of tremendous depth for the most part. And this lake up in British Columbia, at this lake, there's an abundance in this lake of fish, krill, and shrimp. And what's interesting to me is most paleontologists propose that plesiosauruses probably ate primarily shrimp. I don't want to try to make too much out of that, but I do want to make much out of what there's much to make out of, and that is over 1,170 reported sightings. Now, that's not counting all the people that saw something and didn't want to appear foolish or whatever and make some type of report.
Didn't take the time and the effort to do that.
Yeah, and you take someone that, whatever their profession might be, you know, and I don't get off on topics here, but it's like the fellas talking UFOs. Often you claim to have seen whatever, and you can discredit your own self in your particular vocation or your field of endeavor. So anyway, again, this is over 1,170 people that took the time and, in some cases, the risk to report what they've seen. Now, this just goes on and on and on. There's a Lake Champlain in Vermont. This is a lake, again, that has some tremendous depth to it, and we're talking over 500 bona fide reported sightings of some type of a marine reptile, taking on the nickname Champ, if you will. I reflect back here some years back. I was in Montana doing a camp near Flathead Lake, Montana. And I went up and did this camp 5 or 6 years. And I was between camps, between a junior camp and a senior high camp. And I was down near Flathead Lake. A man down there had asked me if I wanted to go fishing for lake trout. And I said, absolutely, I like to fish for lake trout. Okay, well, Flathead Lake is very, very deep. And on the radio, I heard that there had been a sighting of the Flathead Lake monster. And I'm kind of half listening to this because for some reason I thought it was some kind of a car commercial. It had nothing to do with cars. Okay, but at any rate, then I began to listen a little more closely, and I found this was a very serious thing. Someone had sighted what they call the Flathead Lake Monster. Well, I made a mental note of that and didn't get back downtown into town again. That week was really busy. The next year I came up and I decided I'd take some time out and see what I could find out about the Flathead Lake Monster. Okay, and I looked into it and I ended up at the newspaper office and finally spoke with a woman whose deceased husband had been actively involved in trying to locate and take photographs of the Flathead Lake Monster. And the bottom line when I got through with all of that is that, I don't know the number, but there were many, many sightings of this, again, what appears to be some form of marine dinosaur. And many of these sightings, again, by people that had absolutely nothing to gain, and in many cases, quite a bit to lose, by making such a report. And that continues, again, lake after lake. I won't go through this whole stack here because of time, but I have, you can do this on your own, on the internet. Do a little search on lake monsters, if you will, of the world, or cryptozoology, living dinosaurs today and their origins. Pretty interesting stuff. And I'm going to, as I wind down here a little bit on this particular session, two I want to mention. One is in Africa itself, in South Africa, there are many missionaries or some military people that have reported testimonies from various natives that live out in the absolute jungle, out in the Congo, for one, of a dinosaur-like creature that's been sighted in and around their some of their major rivers. They call the creature Makali Membi, which means basically a blocker of rivers. And we're talking about this a similar creature, reports from Nigeria, the Congo, Angola, Gabon, I may not say that correctly, Cameroon. And of this large creature, estimated up to 75 feet in length. And there was even a party that went in a couple of years ago to investigate this. And they did not get any photographs nor see this creature themselves, but interviewed various tribes, natives in the area. And the bottom line is report after report being consistent in their description and of this creature that may well be alive today. And this last one I'm going to touch on. How are we doing here on time, Dave? Come down the wire. Okay. In 1977, a Japanese fishing trawler off the coast of New Zealand, trawling for mackerel about 30 miles east of Christchurch, New Zealand, bringing up its last load of fish in the nets, brought up a huge creature weighing about 4,000 pounds. And this was brought up from a depth of almost 1,000 feet where their nets had been. And I have here in front of me five pictures taken by one of the crewmen of this creature. This creature was put up on block and tackle, lifted up, and two pictures from the front, one from the back, one as it's lying on the deck. And what was this creature? Well, as far as what paleontologists propose a plesiosaurus might have looked like, at initial glance, this appears to be very, very close. Now, this this creature weighing some 4,000 pounds, estimated, is in 10, 11, 12 days of decomposition. And not only that, but it's putrefying, too. Okay, so they took pictures of this thing, and they ended up throwing it back into the sea because they had a hole nearly full of fish and, of course, would contaminate the fish. Now, when this was, there were 42 samples of this creature that were cut and taken and put off to the side, and then these five photographs, and they were turned over to Japanese scientists. Several Japanese newspapers published front page accounts of this particular find. Now, this is in 1977, and I have a listing of some of these papers here in front of me, but I won't try to get through some of these Japanese pronunciations. But the bottom line is there are some very reputable scientists in Japan that said, hey, this appears to be some form of plesiosaurus. This was credible enough that in 1977, Japan came out with a postage stamp, specifically November the 2nd, 1977, of a sea serpent creature very much resembling a plesiosaurus. One of our students from Summit Christian College in Nebraska was at this particular time a missionary, this particular time being just a few years ago, in Japan. And I emailed her and asked her if she could get me a copy of one of these stamps, and she did. She sent me several, and I have a copy, a picture of one here in front of me, again put out in November 1977, what appears to be some form of plesiosaurus, and deemed credible by some of those in the scientific community in Japan. By the same token, you know, did you see this here on primetime news in the United States in 1977? You know?
I don't think so.
I don't think so, or I sure missed it. I didn't see it on the National Geographic Channel nor the Discovery Channel because it was really basically censored out of our culture. There were some publications I have here in front of me, the Denver Post, July 21st, 1977, The Washington Post, July 22nd, 1977, The Boston Globe, July 22nd, 1977, The New York Times, New Scientist. There were articles that were put out basically playing this down and proposing this was some form of a basking shark that was decomposing.
That's what they always say, John.
That's what they always say. And matter of fact, let me see if this is the one here. Bob Schaefer at the American Museum in New York noted that every 10 years or so, a carcass is claimed to be a dinosaur, but always turns out to be a basking shark or adolescent whale. Well, that sounds good, but there is another story, and the other story is this might not have been a basking shark or some juvenile whale, adolescent whale, but in fact the carcass of some form of marine dinosaur.
That was definitely no shark. In fact, they tested the flesh that they cut off, and the scientists came up with 96% similar to a basking shark. But that, you know, there's, that's about the same amount of difference between us and a chimpanzee, right?
Or a banana, by the way, if you're going to take that particular approach, you know.
So that was definitely no shark.
Yes. I'm not saying as an absolute, you know, that it was a marine dinosaur, but I'm saying that there is another story that, again, is consciously, I believe, meticulously censored out of the media. And that is true in virtually every arena, not just creation versus evolution. That really bothers me. You know, living in a nation founded upon the rights of the individual and free speech, and especially our educational system, which has thrived, at least in years past, because of its openness, you know, to give all of the information to a student, allow them to use the mind God has given them to weigh and decide for themselves what is or isn't true relative to any topic, not just creation versus evolution. So exercising biases in that way, to me, is a frame of brainwashing. It is not honest intellectual education, where you, the mentor, supplies the information and allows a student to grow and make their decisions and take on their personal convictions relative to what is or isn't true.
That's right. And, you know, John, you could have said a whole lot more about all those topics that you mentioned. You know, I know that there was quite a few sightings out in Chesapeake Bay of a plesiosaur. They called, nicknamed them Chessie, after an Essie. And then there's, of course, lots of research been done in the Congo, which is something like 80% unexplored, the biggest swamp in the world, the size of Florida, that certainly has some dinosaur creatures living in that because of all the reports that we've gotten out of there from both the pygmies who live there and other natives and the missionaries that have come out of there. And I heard a couple of years ago that there was going to be an expedition going in there from National Geographic, I think it was. They were supposed to try to put this at rest.
Oh, that's interesting. And you mentioned that, you know, so much unexplored area. Just today, I received from a friend of mine in Nebraska an email showing the African continent and really how large the African continent is. And it has superimposed on it the shape of the United States. There's India, several other smaller countries, and all of China superimposed on the African continent with plenty of room to spare. Notice it's an enormous continent. When we talk about the Congo and many of those, there are many areas that, at least not in recorded history, of a human actually putting a foot on the ground. You know, that we haven't been everywhere on this earth, even though we're off on Mars now.
That's right.
And the same thing with New Guinea, the rainforest of New Guinea and New Zealand. And
Well, you know, we have managed to scratch the surface of the topic, and probably we'll get deeper into it next time. But, John, how can people email you?
You can contact me through my email address, which is jnay@creationscience.net. jnay@creationscience.net. And I want to thank Prescott Valley Christian Church for their support. It's very much appreciated. I really pray this information that's shared on this program strengthens all that are listening our faith in the inspired Word of God. He has not left us here in some position of not being able to determine what is or isn't true. He's Great. Given us this lamp into our feet.
That's right. Come on back next week for more Dinosaur Science in the Bible with Dr. John Nay.
Okay.
Okay, we got two of them.